Well, that's precisely the right title, I think, and probably more appropriate for the spirit of this workshop, because we're in sort of the talk about superpotentials induced by fluxes I gave a while ago in many places. So are people, I think, mostly familiar with this story, how superpotential is generated by a monomer flux? And I guess it's the time to speak of various applications, and that's the kind of review I'll try to give today. So the central theme will be superpotential induced by background fluxes. Well, briefly, I'll review the formula, the general expression for the superpotential as a function of flux. It has a very nice form. It can be represented as an integral over the space-time of some differential form called calibration. Later I explain what that means. Wedge flux. Well, we are very familiar how to represent Ramon-Ramon fields by differential forms. So this expression makes a perfect sense and therefore gives an analog of Cyber-Quinton periods but for superpotentials. So this subject itself was a subject of my talk that I just mentioned a while ago, and I had the goal then was to explain the very fact that turning on the ground Ramon-Ramon fields or other fluxes produce for us a superpotential in the effective field theory. That's the right interpretation. So for today, this will be just reviewed, and this will not be the main goal of my talk. And I'll try to use it for various things. First, the issue of superpotential in string theory, of course, occurs only in n equals 1 theories. And in particular, if you're interested in n equals 1, d equals 4 theories. This may have some application to construction of realistic models. Second of all, and not related to this, is construction of warped quantifications. In fact, turning on Ramon-Ramon fields in the background produces a back correction on the graviton and warps the metric of the space-time. In particular, it warps the metric in a way closely related to the Randall-Sundrum scenario. So one could think of construction of realistic models a la Randall-Sundrum in the context of quantifications with Ramon-Ramon fields. This has been used in particular, this idea has been used in a work of, in various works of Hermann Verlinde and recently by Polchinski, Kachura, and Giddings, which I think is still in progress and a little bit more explicit. So then, within this realistic branch, I should mention that turning on fluxes in space-time typically freezes many modular fields. And this will be one of the applications I'll particularly try to review today. So one particular feature is stabilization of moduli. So it turns out that supersymmetric minima of these superpotentials are just fixed, isolated points in the moduli space of our quantification. Well, we're very much familiar with the fact that quantifying string theory or M theory or F theory on some internal space-time produces a lot of moduli fields, and the big problem is how to get rid of that, especially in the early period of expansion of our universe. And, well, this is essentially the moduli problem. And it turns out that our quantifications with some background fields do freeze moduli for us and are represented by isolated points in the moduli space. So most of the moduli fields are massive, and I'll comment on this. So one straightforward, well, these special points, isolated points in the moduli space, or isolated vector are just analogs of attractor points. So one could call them n equals 1 attractor points. Here I'm not referring to any black hole physics. This is just geometric analog of attractors in case of collabial threefolds. So if here you ask, what is a special point in n equals 1 quantification of string theory as opposed to black hole, our claim is that the points which will appear during this talk are exactly the special points in the modulus space. And the equations are extremely similar to attractor equations. One could simply count these points and ask what is the meaning of the number of all these points. More precisely, this can be stated as evaluating trace minus 1 to the f supersymmetric index in this theory. This will count these points with certain weights, and actually it will count the Euler number of the modulus space of some supersymmetric cycles on this manifold. And this will produce some topological invariance. Of the internal space. So roughly we know that we can, for any manifold, we can count the number of BPS states with a given homology class or with a given charge, and this should produce some kind of topological invariant for our manifold. And supersymmetric index in the theory with this superpotential is a precise physical way of stating the problem. Precise for physics, of course, not including the mathematical questions of compactness and so forth.
So you're thinking of a compact space with a potential, and you want to compute trace minus 1 to the f?
Yes. Trace minus 1 to the f with a low-dimensional theory with this superpotential. Well, basically, once I have some four-dimensional theory or any other theory with this amount of supersymmetry and some superpotential, I could ask, what is the value of this index in this theory?
But this is a Wolfschmidt index.
No, this is space-time. This is supersymmetric index in the effective theory with this superpotential. So in the cleanest situation, it just counts the number of isolated vector, and in some other situation, it counts the Euler number of the variety of such vector. And it turns out to have nice interpretation, geometric interpretation for the quantification space. And finally, last but not the least, is a study of conifolds, where namely superpotentials in the quantifications on conifolds are perhaps there is a link to the, well, more direct than an observational link to the story presented by Igor here on the previous lectures. And today I'll briefly mention this point from another point of view, from a point of view of recent paper by Maldacena, Vafa, and Ati on G2 conifolds and M3. I'll try to connect R2A conifolds and M3 conifolds. And in this connection, one can easily see how one can sum over all membrane instantons. So a contribution to the superpotential of single membrane instanton was worked out by Harmin Moore, evaluating one-loop determinants. And multi-cover formula was conjectured in a slightly different context by Guri and Vafa. So putting these things together, one could roughly guess what should be the form of the superpotential summing up over all membrane geometries. And it turns out that this kind of the superpotential computes the entire answer for us, including the multi-cover formula and the one-loop determinants. So I'll come to that as well. So first, let me go quickly through this part and remind how this general expression of the superpotential comes about, and later I'll go to the applications. Well, also, I'm trying to keep this sort of informal, so please feel free to ask any questions or suggestions. In particular, the point which I just raised, the stabilization of modules, is of course very speculative, and it deserves some comments or critic, so please feel free to give in.
Are you planning to stabilize all the modules?
Yes. Okay. Unfortunately, in a region where...
Including the
dilaton? Yes, I guess so. Yes. But unfortunately, in a region which is not very good for phenological applications. In particular, first, I don't have a specific model. I wish by the time of giving this talk, I could have a specific model, and Joe was encouraging me to find one for a few recent weeks. But it turns out that all such points are, it's just a matter of finding the right model in the first place. And second of all, such are vacuum with the model are stabilized produce cosmological constant for us. So it's actually ADS quantification, not the flat space quantification. So I don't know how to address that point in the general framework, at least at the level of generality I'll be talking here.
Is the mechanism roughly that you have e to the pi times h squared plus e to the minus pi times another q squared, and you have both ns and another multiplied?
I'll come to that.
When you stabilize the dilaton because it's sort of ADS plus something with quantized volume?
Yes.
The volume is quantized. So this Minkowski is going to be much harder to stabilize the volume of the system.
Yes.
Are you going to tell us a candidate class of models that do this?
No, if I knew a candidate, working out the details would take a couple of days, and I would present the complete model rather than a general scenario. So I wish I could have that.
Your scenario has a way of getting rid of the overall volume module system.
Yes. So to start with, let us take a type trace string 3 on a call of the L4 form. X, which is, just for the sake of concreteness, this is a typical example where on scratch we get four supercharges and the issue of superpotential may arise. So if we quantify trace string 3 on this color BL, we get two-dimensional theory, just because this is eight-dimensional. So we are in two dimensions, and we have two left and right supersymmetries. So the Lagrangian, effective Lagrangian for this two-dimensional theory is supergravity. If I keep the volume of X finite and keep all the light mods, plus sigma model action. And the sigma model is based on a target space, which is classically just the space of deformations of X of the color BL, such that it stays within the same class of manifolds. Namely, this is the product of complex structure model space times color structure model space. So the light fields, before I turn on any fluxes in the background, are in gravity multiplet, supergravity multiplet, which are the dilaton, in particular type 2A dilaton just goes to two-dimensional dilaton, graviton itself, supersymmetric completion of the multiplet, plus some matter fields which are parameterized this manifold.
You're assuming that you don't need to add any space filling strings also?
So far, I'm sort of neglecting this issue. I'm coming to this. Yes, this is a good point. So far, as I've described this, it's inconsistent because I have to cancel anomalies in a consistent quantification. So I'm forced to turn on either fluxes or background brains. So that's where I'm coming.
You could also have two-one forms.
Here I put them to zero because in In my story, it's R quite peripheral because I don't know how to produce super potential for that R. That's one reason, yes.
Why don't you fix the class of X?
You
said you just stayed in one class of X.
I mean that it remains colored, yeah. These are...
Right, but I'm just wondering about the way that you said the moduli space factorizes. It'll factorize...
Locally.
Okay.
I forgot to mention.
Transition. So, I mean, this is a horrible looking space.
Yes. So, locally, the fields take values in the tangent space to this. So, that's what I mean, yes. Okay. Right, as I was pointing out, I have to turn on some background Ramon-Ramon fields. In particular, I have to cancel anomaly if order number of the color BL is non-zero, there is an anomaly of this amount, chi over 24, which has to be canceled either by brains and space filling strings in this case. This would be D3 brains in the F-theory computation on the same color BL. Plus G squared over 2 integrated over the color BL. This is a G-flux, 4 form from the Ramon-Ramon sector of type 2A string. So I don't want to deal with brains or strings now, so I'll assume this is zero in particular, and I will turn on some Ramon-Ramon 4 form instead and see what happens. Just follow my notes. What happens is that in general supersymmetry is broken. The case of computification on 8 manifolds with G-fluxes was analyzed by Beckers about 5 years ago, and what they found that G has to obey special conditions. In order to preserve some supersymmetry. These conditions can be stated as follows. It's a condition that 3,1 part of G flux has to vanish, and also G has to be primitive, obeying the condition G of HK equals to 0, where K is a Keeler class of my color BL 4 form.
Okay?
No, just like this. So it's a 6-4.
Okay, we're phrasing it in the M-theory context, so it's the same in type 2A.
Yes, it's a... If I have just a G-flux, it's exactly the same in type 2A, right?
Have
the
Ramon-Ramon fluxes? What if you try to turn on some other
Ramon fluxes? I'll do this in a moment, so stay tuned. Well, we have this computification on space X, and we know that by canceling anomaly, we have to introduce some, say, G-fluxes. This breaks supersymmetry. However, what could be the interpretation of this effective field theory from the point of view of two dimensions? So far, we had scalar fields parameterizing the whole modulus space of color BL. And now, only special points on the modulus space where these equations are obeyed are good points where supersymmetry is restored. So, well, since D-terms cannot leave vacuum degeneracy in theories with 4 supercharges, I argue that this has to be some F-term, namely the superpotential. Well, I should rather write what it is. Of various moduli fields in the problem.
Are all of these moduli chiral or some twisted chiral?
Yes, these guys are chiral and these are twisted chiral. At this stage, there must be 2 possibilities. Thank you for this comment. There should be a possibility of turning on superpotential and twisted curl superpotential in 2 dimensions. These guys are analogs of Eliopoulos terms in high-dimensional theories. So this is twisted curl measure, and this is W tilde. So this is function of complex structure modes. Let's call them T. And this is function of Keeler structure modes. Let's call them K. Well, let me just guess what could be the functions W and W tilde such that these conditions are reproduced. Well, I claim that this condition is equivalent to saying that dW with respect to scalar fields dt is equal to 0 if W as a function of fields t has the following form of the complex structure model. If it's an integral over x of omega of hg. Well, in fact, since light fields in the effective theory are just complex structure modes, differentiating, well, it's omega, the one who depends on this guy. Of course, g is just a constant, which I put in the background. So differentiating omega with respect to this t covering derivative, I produce all the elements omega 3, 1, which are in 3, 1 part of the cohomology of my Calabi-Yau space. Therefore, wedging with G, I eliminate exactly this part of G, which should be eliminated according to Katrin and Melanie Becker's.
And G is real, so it must have both 3, 1, and
yes.
1,
by complex conjugation, it follows that the other part should vanish as well, right? So, what we've learned that adjusting G-flux, which satisfies this condition, puts some constraints on the curl fields, which parameterize complex structure model. So we follow the logic that taking some constant G, what should be the model of Calabi-Yau to obey supersymmetry? And, well, this question is naturally addressed in the two-dimensional framework where we have this effective superpotential.
So you don't need to know the K-R-potential?
Well, depends on whether I want to put W equal to 0 or not. In two dimensions, in principle, I may have W not equal to 0. Then I have to use appropriate covariant derivatives with a curl potential, which is to the leading order, is nothing but minus logarithm of omega wedge omega bar. This is what follows from naive Kolodziejczyk reduction. So plugging the scene and using these conditions, you see that still this condition implies this. But I'm not going to that detail now. Well, for the sake of simplicity, I may just assume that W has to be 0, and then I don't have to know that curl potential. But in general, yes, I do.
Just by counting, you generically can't set W as 0, right?
No, I can't, right. That's why I have to deal with this issue, right? Right.
By counting parameters.
Counting means that I have the same amount of equations, dW over dti, as the number of ti's, right? So in general, this is a system of, say, H31 equations for H31 variables, and I'm not left with any other freedom to fix W equal to 0. So in general, in fact, yes, I do end up with vector which have W not equal to 0. It turns out that this vector correspond to some two-dimensional spaces, ADS2 complications with non-constant dilaton, and they have quite interesting physics, but I'm not going to launch into that story. Well, the other function for curl fields can be written in the following form, also as an integral over the space X, but now instead of wedging G with omega, I take a wedge product of G wedge K wedge K, where K is a curl form. Can you see it from back? I mean, probably I shouldn't write it that low. I promise this is the last time I do. Well, let's take a variation of W tilde with respect to the curl mods. Well, G is again just a constant, so the only thing that happens is that I vary K here. And this variation should be valid for any delta k. Therefore, just omitting this part, I learned that g of hk has to be 0, which is precisely this condition. Okay. Well, so far I was guessing, and this is the guess. It turns out to be correct. Let me give some more arguments, more precise arguments.
Two questions?
Yes.
One is, from this part, it looks like if you find one solution, you can just scale k.
Right.
So this here the counting won't work because even though you have enough equations, you can't quite do that. The other question is, mirror symmetry would exchange W tilde and W. And with W, we found that you could uniquely fix the points in complex moduli space. But with W tilde, I just argued that you can't uniquely fix the point in Kalman moduli space. That doesn't look mirror symmetric.
Yes, thank you for the question. And problem is that theory, say in particular two-dimensional theory, is mirror symmetric, right? But the particular background I've just studied is not. In fact, the G-flux I studied is a 4-4. So in order to achieve mirror symmetry, well, so far it was quite generic. It was an element of so-called horizontal part of the cohomology in the moduli space. But I should have also considered G, well, all other fluxes, 2-form flux and 6-form flux and 0-form flux, which I'll do in a moment. These will correspond to completely mirror symmetric results. So W and W tilde will be mirror symmetric and will be fixed points, isolated points. There won't be any freedom of rescaling in general, of course. Notice that in M theory we don't have these other fluxes, right? But in M theory we don't have mirror symmetry.
Right.
So it's consistent. Okay, and now to the mod.
So what approximations of these?
Large volume limit. This is approximation where the size of X is much, much greater than L string.
Also, G string is zero.
Yes.
So there could be corrections to W and W.
Yes, in fact, right. In fact, for W, which is just G over J omega, claim is that there are no corrections at all. There are no free brains in type 2A. Yes, instanton corrections, I mean, sorry. And W is corrected, which has form of GVHK, VHK, since Keller class roughly is corrected by wall sheet instantons, say five brain including instantons, these W tilde gets a bunch of corrections from instantons. And mirror symmetry relates explicit expression for the period here to corrections including five brains and wall sheet instantons.
I was thinking, are there any kind of D-brain corrections for W?
I can't think of any because, well, to correct this expression, I would have to have a D brain which wraps 4 cycle in order to contribute to this omega roughly, right? So, but there are no free brains in type 2A. I'm staying in type 2A so far because I have this G flux. So it looks like there are no brain or, well, from either sector of string theory, brain corrections to this expression. However, there are two candidates for corrections to this expression, namely wall sheet instantons and five brain instantons. This wouldn't be supersymmetric in the first place. Such instantons would not be supersymmetric configurations. I'll come to this in a minute. It'll be crystal clear in a moment. Because what I'm going to do is to justify these expressions, which I just guessed, from identifying solitons in this two-dimensional field theory with D-brains wrapping various cycles inside X. In particular, I'm taking some cycle in X. Let this be my Calabi-Yau space, Calabi-Yau fourfold. And let me choose a D4 brain sitting somewhere inside on a 4 cycle. Well, this will look like a particle after a quantification, so this will be soliton. And solitons in two dimensions are break the space, which is just a real line, into two pieces. So this is one part of the space, and this is the other. And these are essentially the domain walls. So they separate two possible vacua going from one field configuration to the other, from one vacuum configuration to the other. Let us identify these two configurations on the left and the right of the soliton. I claim that these correspond to configurations where g-flux changes its value from g1 to g2 such that the difference g2 minus, well, delta g over 2 pi is Poincaré dual to the cycle, to the 4-cycle that default brain writes. This follows from the simple fact that default brain is a magnetic source for the g-flux, and therefore crossing its world volume means that g-flux jumps by a unit amount corresponding to this cycle. This is a relation I want to use. Now I want to implement supersymmetry and say that let this default brain be supersymmetric, meaning that the soliton is also supersymmetric. This is a BPS state in my theory. So here it means that the cycle should be supersymmetric, and for the sake of concreteness, let's take special Lagrangian cycle, which could be abbreviated as Slack manifold. It means that the volume form of this cycle S is nothing but imaginary part of the omega, which is apparently constant holomorphic 4-form on the color BR. Now, what I want to do is to evaluate the mass on both sides in two dimensions and from microscopic perspective and see if they agree. Here, the mass of the state of this default brain is just the volume of this cycle, volume of S, which is integral over S of this form omega. This is a volume form. Should use curly notation. So once I integrate it over the entire cycle, I get the whole mass. And
Why did you take the imaginary part off of omega?
Well, you have to fix a notation that either real part or imaginary part of omega restricts to something non-zero on this cycle S and corresponds to the volume part, volume form. The other part, either real or imaginary, according to your notation, should restrict to zero. Yes. I'll be quite loose here, so I'll just restrict the omega itself. Say that this is the mass of my BPS state of the default brain wrapping this configuration. Well, now we use Poincaré duality to rewrite this integral as omega wedge delta g over 2 pi. Okay? Well, this is almost like the expression for the superpotential we had before. Indeed, soliton in two dimensions has the mass of delta W, difference, absolute value of the difference of the superpotential on both sides of the space. So I take W1 minus W2, evaluate the absolute value. Here I am, this is the mass of the BPS soliton in two dimensions.
You're turning off gravity when you
right.
Should the low energy approximation break near the core of the soliton?
This is just a D brain if we can explain.
would
it's a D brain.
I would say it's BPS state.
In two dimensions, that's
yes.
A big deal.
Right. And you're worried that I may pass bad points and that
yes.
Once I'm going there or just.
There is a some sense is a jump.
So I'm a little bit cheating here, and I didn't want to go to that issue. So in fact, I'm considering the model space. I raised that, but it was model space of complex structure effects times model space of Keller structure effects. That's indeed the low energy approximation very far on this and this side. However, this whole thing is should be upgraded to include moduli of fluxes in the internal directions. Because, well, in fact, I'm changing from G1 to G2. Well, once these are quantized, I have to consider not the continuous space, but the sheets of various G-fluxes, such that, in fact, I jump from one to the other. And, well, working in the classical approximation, I may forget about the integrality condition. But yes, I do have to consider moduli fields which correspond not only to complex and curved structure deformations, but also to the deformations of these, to the parameters parameterizing these fluxes, right?
And the fluxes are quantized.
They're discrete parameters.
Right.
The modulus space actually splits into
disjoint. Right, yeah, so they're not really modulus.
But
they don't go
classically over four large fluxes. I could consider that G is some constant, say, x times omega plus y times k squared and so forth, right? And I have these x and y, which come to the on the same footing as complex and curved structure moduli.
But
so
that's part of the quantization condition for arbitrary x and y.
Yes.
I think the answer to your question, Nikita, is that you could phrase this as an entirely a BPS argument, that you compare the central charge to the two solids, and you know that the central charge of the soliton, there was a difference. That's the potential on both sides of these two directions.
That only works if you can connect this to it by a continuous part.
No, the calculation that gives that to you in terms of the Sagan model of the direction of field formulas, but I think as a statement about supersymmetry, yes.
I mean, I think there's a difference between the between this argument in 1 plus 1 dimension and higher dimension. Because in higher dimensions, you can surround the soliton by a sphere, which is connected. So you don't worry about jump factor. But in 2 dimensions, it's really just 2 distinct. The soliton separates the space in 2 distinct spaces.
No, but you just define, you just assume supersymmetry and this BPS is a central charge, and you just define the superpotential as that thing that controls central charges.
What I worry about is that actually this difference, you compute the mass as a sum of two differences, the difference between left infinity and to the left of the soliton, and plus the difference between the right the soliton and the right infinity. So there is an unknown uncertainty which you attribute to the soliton itself, which should come from the microscopic description of the circle.
But you don't have to say what the microscopic description is.
How do I know that the difference is zero? It's microscopic difference.
Well, it's not zero. You just say that the difference between left and right is attributed to the soliton and everything around. Okay, well, I didn't convince it.
Point number one over genes?
Yes. Yes. There is one.
Also in
the superpotential. Yeah, also in the superpotential, right. That's one of the
just strictly one of the zero, but
yeah, that's why I didn't want to say
it's
zero.
Take G to be small,
yeah.
G-string.
Well, to address this question,
there's a non-zero non-zero, but we have a charge particle.
Well, let me just make a comment to your question. We do have to consider these fields, which are geometric model of the Calabi-Yau plus model of the fluxes. So we have to consider superpotential, which is a function of all the fields. So the function I'm giving here can be thought of as obtained by integrating out these degrees of freedom corresponding to the change of flux. So in fact, the function for the superpotential is a function of everything, of geometric model of the Calabi-Yau plus parameters of the fluxes. And it makes sense to consider these guys because if you consider trace of minus 1 to the f in a theory where you keep this moduli corresponding to the positions of fluxes, you do count various number of BPS states. If you integrate this out, you already lose this information. So in some, well, for my purposes, studying physical effects, it was not that necessary. But I want to remind you that, yes, you do have to keep dependence on the parameters corresponding to the fluxes. And quantization issue, I don't think it occurs in the perturbation theory, like perturbative string doesn't know about this. So it's consistent.
Go ahead.
What does the super potential look like at singularities on the modular spaces and poles?
This one or the one which includes parameters of the fluxes. Well, I guess in any event, the answer, proper answer should be that I didn't look carefully enough to address your question in full generality, but certainly there are points in the model space where either this expression or the one which includes all the corrections are where some BPS states become massless. And these are potential points where we should expect.
Yeah, the short answer is looks exactly like the mass of a brain.
Yes, right.
Well, that's a good point. You might have expected poles in the superpotential, but you expect poles in the mass of the brain.
Wait, why do you expect
poles? Because of this old result of Baker and Witten that in n equals 1 supergravity, in 4 dimensions, the superpotential transforms into a section of the line bundle over the this moduli space, which is it's a line bundle of negative curvature.
So
and this is a compact space.
No, this is not a compact space.
It is a compact
space. It's not, because you have to see as you go around and make monodrums, you effectively change these charges. It's like the monodrums of these brains turning into other brains. You like to go to the unit, to the cover of the moduli space.
And that
leaves
it uncompact.
Yeah, generally. So it's like saying, compare the upper half plane with the fundamental region of SL2Z. And if it's really
both
something independent of a charge or a choice of cycle, then it's the fundamental region and it's compact from any purposes. But if you have to also pick a cycle, then then the relevant question is.
And you said these cycles have been picked out
because of the flux.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you sum over fluxes, then you'll have a variance of that.
That's right.
Which is the kind of section of the line bundle over the fundamental domain.
That's right, but that's not what we're talking about here.
Well, we will.
Anyhow, that's why there doesn't have to be a pole.
But there would after Greg Simpson talks on.
With a fixed set of functions, you will write off the sum of the functions.
Sorry?
Saying just with a fixed set of functions,
you no, he's saying any quantity
of functions to the given back.
It depends on a physical point. Some local moduli space and not also some choice of brain or something.
That would have a
then you might start to expect to get a pole.
Okay. Let me generalize this. Well, so I guess you now see the ultimate goal of all this calculation, that evaluating the mass of the D-brain, I get expression which looks exactly like the superpotential, namely using this formula with W equal to G veg omega. In fact, I just reproduced this answer. So one feature of this is it's linear in flux. It is quite easy to generalize this to arbitrary D-brain of even dimension in type 2A3. I just have to replace the special Lagrangian cycle by some other supersymmetric cycle, and the feature of this, well, I have to come up with some kind of volume form on this cycle, and this is known to be goes under the name of calibration. Let me call this psi. So this is closed form, differential form of the manifold X, such that it restricts to any submanifold of the corresponding dimension to something which is greater or equal than the volume form. Less than or equal to the volume form of this surface S in general. And the surfaces which satisfy, or submanifolds which satisfy this bound, where these becomes exactly equality, are supersymmetric or minimal volume cycles in the manifold. These are called calibrated cycles. This is very quick recap of what calibration is. Yeah.
So this calibration is something different than K.
Yes, it is. Actually, omega is a calibration for special Lagrangian cycle. K is a calibration for holomorphic curve in the Calabi-Yau. KVHK, the one for holomorphic surface. KVHK is the one for divisor, and so forth.
And the omega is just the imaginary pair of omega.
Right. I'm a bit loose. Right. It's imaginary or real part because you can rotate omega by a phase. So it's up to you, in fact.
But KVHK is truly real objects. So how are you going to make complex people doing that?
Right. So far, I'm just, this is also real, right? This is absolute value of the superpotential, in fact. So I have to rotate my W such that it's actually real and evaluate this thing. But in string theory, we of course know that our Keller mods pair up with the mods of the B field coming from the Kaltz-Aklan mods of the two cycles. So in this story, everything is actually complex and holomorphic, right?
That seems like your argument didn't just assume it was a D-brain, just any brain with a flux that you can get down to two dimensions, you can make this argument.
Sorry?
So any brain which is supersymmetric and governed by calibration,
right?
Once you get down to two dimensions,
Some flux. Right,
yeah.
Some flux. Yeah, sure. It should work for NS brains or right. That's why just going through the same argument, now instead of omega, I have to use psi integrated this calibration, which is in our case this guy or this kind of thing, this kind of forms. I should get expression that some flux now, delta of flux jumps and I will take a wedge product with psi. So this should be the expression for the superpotential, which I'll write in the closed form now. So repeating this identification of D brains with solitons in the effective theory, I conclude that superpotential in general is integral over entire space calibration. Wedge flux, and that's true that flux can be anything, including an SNS flux, say, three-form H field, which would be relevant for G2 manifold complications or any other story. So, Calabi-Yau assumption here is fairly. I don't think it's much necessary. The only place where we used it is to get four supersymmetries. So in fact, even four Calabi-Yau three-folds, by including the fluxes, we can get n equals one supersymmetry. And even then, this formula works, as I'll show in a minute.
Isn't there a possible integration constant? I mean, you've shown us the flux dependencies. So your argument doesn't exclude an additive term.
Right, which would be, right. This would be crucial for getting vector where the value of W is non-zero. So in fact, this is a very naive argument. In fact, to prove these kind of formulas, I should compare conditions in 10 dimensions, microscopic supersymmetry conditions, which include variation of gravitino field and variation of dilatino field equal to zero. And compare these to the conditions that dW equal to zero and W equal to some constant. Well, actually, the value of W should be equal to the mass of the gravitino, the same which follows from this formula. And this would fix the integration constant for me. It turns out that it's that it's zero, as follows from this naive formula.
So you have an argument.
Yes, I have an argument that this is just the value of the superpotential, right? After all, for example,
when you turn off the fluxes, supersymmetry is unbroken.
Right. For example, if I turn on the fluxes, I should expect zero cosmological constant, right?
But there could still be non-perturbative.
Oh, yes. Suddenly. Right. Sorry. This is plus instantons. Oh, I didn't mean to say that. Yes.
This is all tree level on G string.
Right. I claim that this expression has no zero order piece at the tree level of G string. Right.
So you can't just say it's, you
can't always say that it's a tree level empty string because sometimes you might apply it in formula and M theory, and there's no such notion.
Right. Actually, that's what I'm going to do next. I'll just consider this piece, which is sort of classical piece, plus instantons. Right. Certainly, there are corrections, instanton corrections to this expression. Yeah, I didn't mean to say that this is the exact answer. This is good in the large volume limit where instanton dies exponentially.
Serge, in F-theory specifications with the Dole-Tai gradient, you have a one-form flux. Is there a term here corresponding to that? Is there a corresponding calibration?
Term?
Seen it written down, but it seems like it would be.
Which one?
Okay, if you have a Dole-Tai gradient, or a Ramon scala gradient, you have a one-form flux. And since this expression has all of the fluxes on the same footing, is there some expression involving that? Is there a?
You mean in the vacuum where this mass parameter is non-zero in the gravity, right? In the type 2A supergravity.
No. In 2B, when you have a dilatant, when you have a one-form Ramon flux, a dilatant.
There's no calibration.
The point is, there's no calibration of codimension.
Yeah, there is no such calibration for.
Well, when you circle the D7, I mean, there are sort of non-trivial chaos around D7 grades, so that says there is.
Those aren't cycles.
That's not a calibration.
There's no associated calibration.
Either, you know, say that you have more data, you know, like tau or whatever, or you can give it in higher dimensional terms, in which case it would be a two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
I have no calibrations of codimension 1 at all, right? Whose circuit is smaller by 1 than the dimension of the planet. All these kind of places.
On the torus, it exists what you say, right? These fluxes have been turned on and interrupted in that application.
And they contribute energy, so that must somehow appear in the action.
Right.
What about this? What about in the space of time directions?
I prefer to, well, this is the story about K3. So now we know that all fluxes in, well, self-duality of Ramon-Ramon fields is very important in type 2 string theory, right? So I prefer to use self-duality to relate a two-form flux, which has indices, well, 0, 1, or, for example, in two dimensions. Change it, dualize it to 8-form in the internal direction, and include on the same basis as other guys. The same with G01, mu nu, and so forth. In particular, now it's easy to check that expressions for general fluxes are indeed mirror symmetric and invariant under various dualities. Well, mirror symmetry is just one particular example of a T duality. So, of course, there are others. And from insides of K3, all of them should come on the equal footing.
Did you take a position on whether
instanton
corrections could depend on the flux or not?
Yes, they do. In fact, they do. And it's hard to get that dependence. Well, that would be a very interesting question for further study. For example, we know that if we have a G-flux, then pipe brain can no longer wrap a divisor where this G-flux restricts to something non-zero. That's because of the equations of motion on the wall volume of the pipe brain. So, yes, they definitely must be dependent and crucial one. Well, now, applying this formula, in particular quantification of type 2A string I was talking about, I have two types of calibrations. One is omega, and the other is 1 over k factorial, n factorial, Keller form to the nth power, wedge power. These are two examples of calibrations that exist for collabial portfolios. These correspond to holomorphic cycles of various codimensions, and these correspond to special Lagrangian cycles. So inserting one of these in the formula, in this general formula, I get omega of h g. It has to pair up with the g flux, which is degree 4 in the collabial. That's already the known answer, the one we met before. And inserting this expression, we get a generalization of g, which k. Now, actually, we have this term plus, for example, f wedge k to the cube, or plus mass parameter in type 2a string theory, which is which produces a cosmological constant in 10 dimensions, wedge k to the fourth. And if I have dual 6 and 8 form fluxes, I have the other terms as well. So this is a completely general expression. And in fact, if you write down coefficients, it can be brought to the very nice form, which is an integral over the Calabi-Yau flux, which is a formal sum of all degree four Ramon-Ramon fields, which e to the k, where k is the Keller class. So this one of the n factorial particularly accounts for this exponential part. And it's known by the study of Wall-Sheet CFT associated to this Calabi-Yau that this expression is mirror symmetric of this one. So in particular, now mirror symmetry is restored within, yes.
Again, since this calibration is just the real part of omega or imaginary part of omega, so doesn't mean that the independent special Lagrangian calibrations and the W, the superpotential, depends on the complex combination of the
that argument I used only to Well, this is the particular form of the superpotential. And I shouldn't use imaginary or real here. It's important that omega is a line bundle of the model space of complex structure of the Calabi-Yau, as well as the superpotential should be. So I don't want to...
You can take the real part with any phase, and there's a whole circle with calibrations. To the organic with all sorts of combinations, you get up to the superpotential.
So how do you get the overall normalization, relative normalization of these? So you know, for example, the n-factorials there?
These two?
No. Well, just of the...
These corresponding terms. Well, naively, I would say that all of them should come with 1 over G string, G over 2 pi, as well as F over 2 pi, which the calibration which has this factorial piece, just to restrict correctly to the volume.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
You say that that's necessary to get
the right. So the relative volumes of the brains would restrict this. However, as I said more explicitly, one can work out the supersymmetry conditions in microscopic theory and compare these to dW equal to 0. This would fix all the coefficients without any freedom left.
Can you somehow derive W tilde from the Trans-Simon coupling on brains?
Looks very reminiscent to that form. However, I don't know. Maybe.
There is one derivative more.
In particular, let me briefly look at the minima of this expression. Before I mention that, quantifications with Ramon-Ramon fields lead to new vacua and new theories, which we probably didn't see before, because our turning on Ramon-Ramon fields from the Wall-Sheet perspective is a hard thing, and it's recently we are learning how to do this thanks to many works of Nothing Berkowitz, but our conceptually it's still pretty transient subject. And in a minute I'll give you some isolated vacua of type 2a theory where some Ramon-Ramon fields are present in the background. So let's consider a particular setting where appropriately normalized, say m over 2 pi, is equal to some constant. This has to be because of quantization condition in type 2a theory. M is a mass parameter of type 2a supergravity, which appears in front of this k to the fourth. As well, I assume that there is a two-form flux, which I take for the sake of simplicity just n2, some constant, times a Keller form. Well, in order for this to be integral, I have to assume that Keller form is integral. So let's take now a Calabi-Yau. I start with a Calabi-Yau x and a Keller form such that it's integrally quantized. I take this m, this and not, and this f, and g flux of the form, of course you probably expect this, some other coefficient times k which k. Okay? This is a particular example. And plug this into supersymmetry conditions, which told me that dW should be 0 and W should be 0 for this superpotential, right? Well, this boils down to two algebraic equations, which have a solution and not equal to minus 2 and 2 equal to 6 and 4. Okay. Well,
you relax the twin-thirty condition on G alone by having a
right. So this is just the opposite. Solution to the Becker's supersymmetry condition would be that G has to be 4-0 plus 0-4. This would produce cosmological constant in two dimensions plus a linear dilaton background plus G22 primitive. This is what has been known in the Becker's. Okay. I take just the opposite of this and consider G, which is not primitive, on the opposite side is just K, which K. But I introduce the other fluxes to suppress this. So these are isolated points in the model space. Well,
how do they work?
Can you get rid of the deltaton in this model?
It is automatic. Well, the overall rescaling now is not a symmetry.
No, I meant the string coupling deltaton.
Oh, not that one. Well, sorry. Yes.
Okay.
Well, certainly.
What is where the deltaton is?
Dilaton is actually dilaton comes in the supergravity multiplet. Yes, so it's not either chiral or twisted chiral. Yes, so I'm not introducing the potential for the dilaton, right? But
I mean, once you change frame,
Otherwise, you could take Dilaton's infinity and you would have a solution, which is not the case. This is not a solution.
Yeah, so this is certainly not a solution of M theory because you manifestly have these kind of fluxes
but
which do not.
But your scales the same way with the dilaton. I don't see any.
Dilaton and the volume is kind of good, basically.
Because K is volume, which what moduli do you have to constrain the overall K word volume? The overall scale.
Yeah.
So it's the volume principle. There can be lots of other moduli that aren't.
Yeah. Let's go to M theory because it's more relevant to realistic construction of realistic models. Then we don't have a dilaton, but we have one problem. From the conditions that G, that K has to be 0, we have still one parameter left, which is just rescaling of the overall volume. And I'll deal with this condition in a moment. Okay. So rather than talking about dilaton in two dimensions, which is a little bit unphysical if we don't have matter, in fact, it becomes physical once we have interaction with other fields. So let me level this for a moment because it's not related to four-dimensional physics, and I'll rather try to address this one.
But your generic Calabi-Yau will have lots of moduli, and they won't be fixed by this.
Well, no.
It's really pretty plausible. I mean, just by this analogy, that this is just a massive sum brain that generically depends on all the moduli.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yes. So it's like. In general, I have now in two dimensions, for example, I have a possibility of turning on all the fluxes in vertical and horizontal cohomology of the Calabi-Yau, including these two forms, six forms, zero forms, all everything. So I claim that for generic flux, of course, we have generic W and generic W tilde, which will fix quaternion complex structure modeling, right?
You have to be at a minimum also, right? It's not just something.
Right.
Attractive
points
exist.
Right.
So this is supersymmetric or not?
Yes, it is supersymmetric.
And is that considered?
In two dimensions, this is a little bit touchy. In Einstein frame, I claim that this is anti de Sitter plus linear dilaton. But, well, since actually, thanks to your comments and as it came out in the recent discussion, we know that in three dimensions, this is not an anti de Sitter space, as we are originally conjecturing. But in two dimensions, it is, right? And moreover, it has a linear dilaton background, which is...
Once you have linear dilaton, it's hard to
think. Right. So that's why I'm saying that it depends on the frame, right?
Why do you have to try a linear dilaton?
Well, this, to show this, I have to go to the whole gravity. So far, I was sort of neglecting that piece of the story. And I have to analyze the supersymmetry conditions in the gravity and see in the dilaton supergravity, right?
If by the dilaton, you mean the string dilaton? And
the one which descends to two dimensions, yes.
Yes.
What do you mean by
the integration question?
Because that's the one dimension where you can't.
Well, right. In fact, I mean the one which follows from the Einstein frame in 10. Yes, sorry for. Yes.
You don't use scale
elementary. Right, right.
I'm confused about the cosmological constant term. Isn't there a contribution and not square times the volume?
Well, no, this is two-dimensional cosmological constant, and
all these other terms also contribute.
They're also all in a positive way. They're all positive integers, right. Fluxes.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yep.
So why don't you roll off to infinite radius again? To make the.
Well, for example, these vector are just, well, I don't want to get to the physics of these compactifications where W and W tilde are non-zero. So far, this vector I get just solving two conditions, dW equal to zero and W equal to zero, just because I don't want to mess with the cosmological constant. In fact, it's a little bit supple, and our physics of this is still under investigation, so I can't give you the full answer.
In the objective supergravity, you're saying that the W and dW allow you to calculate the potential energy from the standard formula e to the k,
right.
W squared minus 3W squared.
Something like that. It's a little bit modification of that.
Does that include the Hodge norms of the fluxes you're turning on or not?
Well,
I'm just confused because this N naught, turning on N naught, induces a large cosmological.
Yeah, as well as the other terms, right? There are contributions from other terms, right?
And their norms are also positive. So where's the negative term?
Oh. Well, this is a little bit silly. Let me think about this. I'm not sure it has to do with this, but just while I'm thinking, I can give you one answer for this. That these are these part of the force anomaly term, which makes an opposite contribution. In particular, G flux has to be such that G at G is equal to this, and contributions of the two cancel each other.
That will give you a negative energy. So is that implicit that you have you implicitly have that condition satisfied?
Yes.
I mean, that's a condition,
yes.
On the topology of the manifold or something on the 11th member?
You say it just
fixes those numbers, you say.
It fixes normalization, Hodge normalization of G for a particular choice of X. So it's not only K, which is integral here, but also, this condition implies a condition for the norm of G, right?
Basically, it's N forms.
Yeah. Yes.
If you're depending on other fluxes, there's extra contributions beyond just the full form.
Right.
So all these things are based on highly non-trivial relations.
Right, some single constraint on the.
Yeah, so far, I'm thinking the opposite. Yeah, I'm slightly turning on upside down my logic. So far, I was giving you the flux and trying to find the point in the modulus space where supersymmetry condition was obeyed. Now, I'm saying, let's take these fluxes and find, I think it's the same logic, right? And find the point in the modulus space where this happens. So then I know that I have to choose k such that it's integral, it's one condition on the Calabi-Yau. It may not occur. Notice that I'm able here to solve dW equal to zero and W equal to zero. As we commented before, this is not a generic situation or generic flux. So in fact, at this point, if I take arbitrary Calabi-Yau X, this may not occur nowhere in the model space.
The formula for the cosmological constant just involves dW and W, right? It's the standard.
Right.
It's okay. Obvious where he's getting the minus. He has minus 2N2 equal to N0. He has a minus sign in one of his choices of flux, and k to the fourth is a positive number.
The energy is the square of the flux. But as the IA doesn't enter into the
non-single form.
No, it doesn't, but it's always somehow implicit. Yes.
What bothers me is G0 is the one that scales the fastest with the volume.
It's enforcing. You see, it's enforcing quantization and scaling of the flux in the same way that all the terms in this formula scale in the same way.
What you're saying is that you're driven to zero volume.
You can't trust
in the regime where you have a solution. That's like
this analogy with the mass of the brain is not just an analogy. It's the same formula. It even tells you that if you have a fixed brain, you're not going to minimize a very large volume. That's a very small volume.
Unless there's an attractor point.
But then the other general conclusion that you draw from that is that the minimums. If the minimum is
not zero, right.
It's going to be at a singular point of the kinetic energy.
Right.
I have a proposal. It is cookie time. So let's get cookies and come back in like 10 minutes and let Sergey finish. I assume you have more.
Yes, I'm almost done. I'm not sure if I can continue for like 20 minutes or so, but. Or 10 minutes.
There
will be no cookies. It's not enough to know the superpotential by itself. We have to know the normalization of the kinetic terms. And in fact, that's a good comeback.
Mm-hmm.
You know that if W is equal to zero, then the normalization is singular.
Okay, so K, in particular in this formula, K inverse. Oh, then you don't know that the cosmological constant is zero, though. There's a K inverse in that formula. If K is constant. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that W is still zero, but.
Okay, there. Well, let me see. You're arguing that the Kalor metric on field space is blowing up?
I have to see which way.
The kinetic term is. Kinetic term for fields.
In any case, if I have large corrections, if you have a massless field, right? Mm-hmm.
So this formula, so at least the formula for the potential in terms of the derivatives of the superpotential involves the inverse of that metric.
Yeah, well, if the kinetic term goes to zero, if the mass goes to zero, that's
yes. I would rather agree that there is some problem in this here.
But then, if you come back, if I down to the number of three dimensions and
four? Three and four?
Yeah. And you have less molecule in there?
Yes. Well, at least some of them. The general problem here is that even this point in the model spaces is not guaranteed to be in the large volume unit. So, in fact, not only that I encounter some brain becoming massless at this point, but I also go somewhere in the deep region of the model space where I should take into account all the instant points. And that contribution to the superpotential is usually of a different nature than the contribution from flux. So, in fact, the physics of this vacuum where value of W is non-zero, where we have cosmological constant is a little bit subtle, and I don't want to get to this issue in any dimension, particularly in deep pool 2, which is still in progress, but
just RR fluxes above two dimensions can't possibly stabilize the dilaton, the string dilaton, right? Because they all scale the same way with the dilaton. Mm-hmm.
If you can get obvious negative contributions from orientable poles and unorientable poles from positive curvature and so on, can you extend the superpotential formula to these more general cases? It seems like this is the starting point.
Right, right.
Sure.
Yes.
Why is this
only? Well, on engineering grounds, I'll say that certainly such contributions also generate potential charts in the action, but I'm not sure I'd also try them in a nice problem like this.
There's one case where this is the same formula applies in the presence of orientable poles. There's no added contributions. They provide a negative term which all sets a positive G wedge G term, but
right,
but this is unaffected.
When you have the orient fold and anti-orient fold, it explicitly breaks supersymmetry. So when it wouldn't come into a supersymmetric formula,
right.
But in components there's a clear contribution. So I guess it's a bad question to ask if the supersymmetric formula persists, but obviously it's a contribution here.
Maybe it's contributions from the Einstein-Hilbert term. Those aren't obviously positive. For example, the conformal degree of freedom contributes a negative term to the Euclidean Einstein-Hilbert hash. So, I mean, you're telling us actually a metric in addition to.
You need some positive curvature.
Well, I'm still worried about this business about the fluxes. And so I'm wondering if there's a negative term growing
on
TV coming from.
Well, I mean, there's a really candidate for that. It's, for example, this R to the fourth term.
No, I'm just talking about R.
I understand. But my concern is that then the system gets quite complicated. And what worries me here is that if this is a, suppose this is an answer, and in the second analogy that it cannot be, then this now is only about G plus, right? And I assume that in general, the formula for the superpotential involves other fluxes, and therefore the cosmological constant should be determined by other fluxes. So this cannot be an explanation to
the fluxes. How does this contribute to the energy? I mean, I thought you just have a B2 wedge IA term or something. Well,
right.
How does it contribute to the energy?
But I think that.
Also, aren't there a lot of derivatives there? Surely this goes to zero. This is self-dominant.
Right,
at the large volume to the Einstein-Hilbert term.
I think this term goes in the same order as G to the is just G square, right? So just on that scale, they should.
The integrals, the topological terms that they cancel, but G squared isn't supermapping, it's part of the action. The R to the fourth term is subleading. So a large volume, you're not going to be able to cancel anything other than Schottky.
You're not taking into account back reaction as the metric from the flux, are you?
Yes, I don't. Well, I don't.
You've done it in a formal solution. You have the wall plan theory.
Mm-hmm.
That's the back thing.
See, that could be the explanation, right?
Well,
because the conformal factor is a part of negative contribution to the Euclidean over action. So if there's a big conformal factor due to the back reaction of the metric from the fluxes, that could cancel off this two effect.
Well, I think that in fact, in some cases, these fluxes do produce warp factor, but at least on.
Well, for example, in the type of solution I was discussing, I think that would happen. Right?
It's hard to see how they wouldn't. I mean, how would you not get a. You'd have to really. In fact, there's no way you could not get a warp factor, at least just with 4-point flux.
Right, but I don't think it.
Yeah, the flux creates a source term from the flux of the warp factor. So the right hand side, mm-hmm. and then
But what worries me is that the box term is equal to just g squared minus base r to the 4. So it doesn't seem to know about the R classes. And I mean, this is, I'm still at this puzzle, so I don't quite like this. So, yes, you're right, but somehow I don't like this because only for g squared. And I would rather. I'd rather try to analyze carefully the metric on the modular space and see that vanishing of the mass of a certain deep brain may help me at this point. This argument seems to be pretty universal, and this argument, well, either with a warp factor or implementing the force, seems to know only about this G flux rather than other flux.
Did you look at the actual super gravity solution with the other fluxes?
Well, this is
extra contribution to the warp factor. The other possible? You kind of, I mean, it seems natural that there should be some extra terms, right?
I think there should be.
Yeah, I think it should be too.
Yeah, maybe, I don't want to completely discard this possibility that, right, that the warp factor may solve the problem and actually cancel this positive contribution out. Yeah, this is certainly a possibility.
The vanishing cycle has flux on that, right? That you're talking about.
The vanishing cycle is essentially Poincaré dual.
It's dual flux. Okay. So you do get the light brain.
Right.
Okay.
That's fine. So Sergey.
If I remember well, you have two superpotentials. One of them contains G-vetch omega, and the other G-vetch K-vetch K for the four cycles, for instance. So they contain the same G. Mm-hmm. So the G is vetched with some of the omega, right? Plus.
No. One is a superpotential, and the other is a twisted superpotential.
Oh, so the other was twisted. Okay.
Yeah, so I'll leave this question about cosmological cosmic for a while apart, and I agree that I cannot completely address the issue of manifest positiveness of this and tell you what else should cancel this. So far, what I've done is just analysis of supersymmetry conditions, so you know that in the large volume there should be a solution, and therefore there must be terms in the interactive section, which, if it is manifestly supersymmetric, then it should include such terms as well. Right now, it's hard for me to say that these terms are coming from the warp factor or other factor.
Is it possible that Trans-Simons terms could do?
Well, that's what I didn't like about this argument, because it's not.
I doubt it, because it would contribute to the imaginary part of the action. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Right. Well, so
just. I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but which fluxes are turned on at the minimal level? Just G4 is turned on, and then DNS?
All of them are monofields.
Well, all of them. Yeah. All of them are monofields in, say, 2-form.
0-form,
yeah.
Then it's awfully hard to construct solutions of this kind.
Don't worry about solving.
No, but I know of very definite solutions, for example, you compactify, say, 11-dimensional supergravity on an 8-fold like this, you turn on a G4, and then you actually have a very explicit solution, so you can look at it and see if it agrees.
You're worried about solving the 6-dimensional, or whatever, the 8-dimensional equations on the...
The 10-dimensional supergravity equations with all these fluxes.
What do you mean going back and solving for the metric at all?
Yeah. Solving for the back reaction and getting the warp.
But you don't really care about that.
Well, people were questioning whether warp factor blows up as a result of the
Well, actually, that brings us back to one of my earlier questions. To what extent do you believe that, say, in M theory, where you don't have an adjustable coupling, do you have to say it's just all? Well, it doesn't seem to me adequate to say a solid line because there's infrared problems anyway. Whatever the
charged particles are dimensions.
You mean three dimensions? Yeah. But you can do a supergravity analysis. You don't have to. But the supergravity analysis is not guaranteed to avoid some awful singularity.
Sure. I mean, maybe it's a large volume supergravity analysis. Can you do that in any large space?
You might wind up with a metric which has a strong curvature somewhere. It's not like you can just perturb the metric. Not necessarily.
You could worry about strong curvature going out in the two dimensions.
That's right. You get a set of equations. The solutions to the equations may not respect your initial answer, the space being large and have large cycles everywhere. But you
can affect the work.
That's what we're worried about.
The work factor can just hit the zero, and your whole transverse space can shrink.
No, it can't. That comes back to the question of what happens at singularities. No, in these complex solutions, one factor has actual minimum.
Well, in M3, we definitely don't have this volume as a free parameter. Moreover, that holds for similar conditions at least at this sort of free level, if I can call it free level, or in Bering Carrier's case. So there is at least one parameter which is not fixed, which is not stabilized. So when I claim to address modeling problem, I have to fix this volume as well. And maybe one way to do this is to include that instanton contributions, or actually the same thing in F there, we do have superpotential, which is roughly G which K which K, and this goes like this. And we also have instanton contributions, which are generally goes the other way around. So there may be some minimum in the modulus case. Well, now this is really speculative because this is close to reality because I'm in M theory or in F theory. But on the other hand, it's harder to control because this generic point where I have to take into account instanton contributions plus free level contributions by fluxes drives me to the middle in the modulus space, like for the structure point. And this is not only in the complex structure, this is also in the color structure modulus space, where it's hard to. And first of all, I'm not anymore in these assumptions that I'm in the polynomial system, of course. So to work out specific model, I would have to find a model where the other number is very large so that I can take flux very large. Which would lead me in the large volume approximation and find the point somewhere far in this axis. But this would involve looking for a Columbia with a touch with a huge Euler number, and so far I was not very successful finding.
But then there are lots of moduli also. Typically then there are lots of moduli also.
Right, but finding Columbia will solve half of the problem because we see that because this is going to be a generic function of all the fields. Even though it has like millions of moduli, all of them will be stabilized. It's more hard to find a model where I could compute a superpotential, say, from instantons. It could be done summing all the, certain divisors or arithmetic genus equal to one in a model where it is a symmetric point of some duality, for example, like this theta function of EA group. Worked out by Beaton, Donnings, and Grassi. But models like these are very sparse, and it's hard to find examples, especially in the region where these are very big. Right?
I mean, you kind of have like two competing sets of bad news, right? I mean, you have to be in a region where the volume is small, so you have to take into account multiple wrappings too. Right? And then you have to worry about like the effects of the bundle on the brains and how to treat that.
We also have to know the
cure. In fact,
Well, one concern is whether the instanton expansion even converges, since in string theory usually doesn't, and you end up doing something else if you're too far down. There are all kinds of
things.
Well, I don't know. I think to spend too much on this. In fact, since I can say too much. Since I'm running out of time, currently, but I'd rather say something more specific about a situation where these formula can be applied
in a case where one could think that this is, well, so this was just for MBL or some other space, you break supersymmetry to four supercharges. We can take our computational equilibrium field, in particular loop for a conical geometry where it is O minus one plus O minus one bundle over CQ1, and take resolution of, well, this is result conical, and put some flux, two-form flux on this space. Well, of course, arguments to the tension of domain walls do not apply because you thought that original theory had too many supersymmetries and actually not has a latent vector but the whole model of space. So you would expect this formula to work, but it turns out that it still works because this flux breaks supersymmetry to n equals 1 in four dimensions. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the superpotential could be f match k match k. Plus, of course, in some time. Well, so far, this is, these background plots are the fact that it brings supersymmetry to a top was first pointed out by Taylor and Wachmann. And many people try to do it for complex LIBLs and it doesn't work since volume has exhibits runaway behavior. Or the volume like kiloton, depending on the context of the problem. But for non-compact LIBL, this seems to work. So for a non-compact limit where volume decouples, or indeed supersymmetry is broken by top and by this flux, and we end up with n equals 1. So it makes sense to write this kind of formula and see what we find. Well, I have to evaluate this part. Well, let me take n units of this one. So, to evaluate this kind of problem, I have to compute quantum volume of the default brain. It's actually non-compact default brain transfers to this cycle. And to do this, I use the relation between these quantum volumes of 0, 2, 4, and 6 cycles, and partition function of topological string. So for the, if I denote it by f0, this is genus 0, depending on t, which is complex parameter of this q1, then the topological string partition function is some homomorphic function of f0. And the quantum volumes of various homomorphic cycles inside this conical geometry have volumes 1, t, which is just the Keller form for the CP1, d f0 over dt, and f0 itself, right? So in particular, I'm interested in this case. So this is quantum volume of four cycle transfers to this CP1. So this expression for n units of fluxes becomes something like n times d f0 over dt. Evaluated. I'm just evaluating this formula for this particular job.
Sergey, can I just ask now for a point of clarification? When you say f on a non-compact LIBL that's isotopically equivalent, do you mean something which has cohomology in the base space over the base space that's the asymptotic form? Or I mean, can you have f have a DR component? Or?
In this case, it's just, yeah.
It's just on the
flux for the S2 G11.
Right. In this case, it's the F makes very perfect sense that the volume form of this CQ1 is flux through this CQ1. But this whole integral is a little bit misleading because the whole space is non compact. So if I formally evaluate this, I should get something like infinity. So my thinking of this is comparing two LIBLs where t differs a little bit one from the other, and so regularizing this integral. Or stated from my microscopic point of view, I'm taking LIBL where I'm very close to the point in the model space I'm saying the vicinity of this kind of jump. I'm thinking that Flavia is big but large somewhere and does not affect.
Oh, okay, but you said you have a global obstacle.
Well, that's true. Right?
I like the first answer better.
So this is actually a result by Buffa from last fall or last summer. Another result of his in collaboration with Ati and Maldacena is that this conical geometry can be lifted in M3. To purely geometric background. Because this is two-form flux, it has to become, it's actually saying that you have not a, in this case, times a circle, but a circle bundle over this conical geometry. Or, say, if you have one unit of these two-form flux over this CP1, this space leads to that space here, which is, from this point, you just half vibration of S2 and S1. And if you have any units of flux, it becomes topologically S3 mod Zn, then space. Now, N refers to the amount of flux I present. And topologically, this space looks like S3 mod Zn cross R4. And it has G2 colony measure. Well. So I have two descriptions of the same theory. One is on the result conical, then units of Ramon-Ramon 2 flux. And the other is pure the geometric quantification of M3 on G2 conical, which has this geometry. Here I have superpotential induced by fluxes, and here is the expression. Well, I can be more specific, I guess, and compute what this is. F naught goes like sum over instant pulse, 1 over n cubed, e minus nt, right? So far I care just about instant pulse contributions. So for this I would say that this expression is n times sum over instant pulse, e minus nt over n squared, because I differentiate once with respect to t. This is usual expression for topological string amplitude on a conical. Well, let's try to see what could generate this kind of potential in M3. And these were all string instantons. So there must be membrane instantons on this side because string leads to a membrane. Moreover, this leaf is very nice and clear because it's instanton by instanton, as I'll explain in a while. So to calculate this expression, I would use two ingredients, namely the result of Harvey and Moore, who evaluated one loop determinant of zero mass on the membrane ball volume and found that contribution of a single instanton in the delta W is given by H1 or scales that membrane wraps on. In our case, it's S3 mod Zn. It's easy to see that this is associative cycle inside this G2 manifold, so it's super symmetric. And well, after all, topologically, membrane can wrap under on this. So it's H1 of this order of this group. It comes from one loop determinant of zero mods, and there is exponential piece corresponding to the volume of this manifold. And of course, working out the relation between M3 parameters and type K parameters, it follows that it's proportional to the size of the two sphere in the result manifold. Yeah. Now, we have to sum over all such instantons, including multiple covers. The sum should look like this. So M3 superpotential as a function of T should be sum of multiple instanton contributions. where I left some space for the vector, and this comes from these one-loop determinants. It's the same for all multiple covers of membrane, and for this length space, this H1 is nothing but Zn. It's a linear group. So order of this group is just equal to n, right? So there is another old factor of n in front of this. So coming from one loop determinant of 0 months. So now we have two expressions. This is type 2a superpotential, and this is M3 superpotential. They look exactly the same, provided that Cn coefficients for multiple covers here go like 1 over n squared. And probably you recognize that result conjecture by Fagori and Rothbard for multiple covers of membrane instant plots. So what happened here is that type 2a superpotential with Ramon Ramon plots generated by Ramon Ramon fields computed for us the whole sum over membrane instant plots in a given due to compactification, including multiple covers and all the coefficients like long determinants. So these seem to be quite powerful. Of course, it would be interesting to apply this formula for other geometries, say take 4 minus 3 model for CP2 with some unit of flux, and if this preserved an equivalent supersymmetry, why don't we leave it to high dimension? Probably, I guess it does not preserve supersymmetry, but some like CP1 plus CP1 maybe. Yeah. So, I think I'll
bring the 1 over n squared, why there was 1 over n cubed in
there. Right, the topological partition function for B model goes like sum over multiple covers, whole sheet instant plots, 1 over n cubed. This is due to Ostwald and Morris. This is multiple cover formula for T, T minus N, T, right? So I had to differentiate it once with respect to T to get the volume of the flow cycle. And this gives me 1 power less in the denominator. So it's 1 over n squared instead of 1 over n cubed.
Is there any fundamental way along with the
fundamental way?
I mean, can you argue for it directly? By actually looking at membranes and computing something?
Well, I think then was the original program of Jeff and Greg are trying to evaluate this contribution by our...
We had a singly wrapped membrane.
Right.
If you had n times wrapped, you might think it would flow this uncomplicated and superconformal filter there against what would you do with the partition function? I'm not aware. I don't even know an argument that the multiple cover formula depends only on the topology of the three metal. In the case of the prepotential and world sheet instantons, it's amazing that the formula is n to the 2g minus 3. It only depends on the topology of the world sheet instanton and not on the embedding space. For example, it doesn't depend on the topology of the normal bond.
Is it the same class of manifolds considered by Anduri and Lothar in the paper about knots?
Well, that's pretty strange, yeah.
Okay, so that's a certain class of topologies.
Yeah.
I think you were just telling me it's for rational
homologies
here.
Right. So far, at least it's for rational homologies.
That's right. So we don't know. I mean, there are, you know, two-dimensional oriented surfaces are classified by one simple number,
right.
G. Okay? It gets a lot more complicated for three manifolds.
Mm-hmm. So the position.
So what would the function be anyway?
But I'm asking if there is an overlap of your work with Andrew and Lapa in considered knots and.
No, we were looking at a singly wrapped membrane. So maybe I understand the question. But we just took a single, we just took the, Berkshoff says Jim Townsend and Brontë. And reduced
right.
Or did the one loop anyways. So that's a single, you would think that if you had a multiply wrapped membrane, it would plug something complicated. And then prevent.
This geometry, couldn't you imagine taking, say, a D3 value?
Yeah.
And reducing some effective quantum mechanics on S3, and maybe computing some index or something like that, which would give you more on S3.
Sounds good.
I
because that one on S-Pad looks pretty familiar. I mean, of course, it shows up in a lot of places, but.
In fact, I didn't understand why you made the comment about the Uguri Wafa the 1/n squared. They were considering sort of hemispherical membranes. So,
well, I think this was conjecture for some their paper.
Yeah, but I mean, for a very different kind of topology, it was sort of open membranes.
Yes, yeah, so that's what I was trying to. I think my feeling is that at least for, well, maybe this is for, my feeling is that this is reasonably universal, very universal formula. So
no, it can't be because of the n to the 2g minus 3 for Wilczek asymptotes. So consider a membrane asymptote, which looks like a genus g Riemann surface times the circle.
Right.
And that should be reducing in some situations to a genus g Wilczek.
Oh, I see.
We know that at least for computing the primitive factor, there's an n to the 2g minus 3. So that proves that there is some dependence on topology.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's right. Well, then maybe that is just the daily class of personal topologies here as well. Well,
second, if you take this G2-Hollerin manifold, isn't there some topological transition that you move to CM? The other side of this app to the core. And if there is, can you calculate the instantons on the other side and find some flop?
Yes, the reason I was staying on this side here is that, first of all, it's the one which corresponds to this side of the manifold. It's a resolution, and in particular, the one where we don't have these polynomial peaks in front of this membrane interval, in front of this Wolfschmidt instanton side. Just analytically continuing to the other side of the manifold and produce such a piece, and I don't quite know how to reproduce it from this G2 manifold geometry or any kind of corrections. So first of all, conceptual reason that it's this geometry which corresponds to that side of the manifold I wanted to compare. But another reason is that to use any formulas like this in M-theory, I want to just stay on a non-singular quotient, and this is in particular the one in the paper by Hoffman. The other portion is singular, it's A and singularity, AN minus 1 singularity bundle over this theorem. I'm not sure if the computation for C0 and 1 determinants still applies. Or well, now I'm finished.